We will proceed. Are there any preliminary matters, first of all, on behalf of Mr. Dunn or Ms. Ashenbrenner?
Nothing here, Your Honor. Thank you.
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Very well. At this point, we're on record in Roy and Nancy Newton, represented by Richard Dunn, who will argue. Richard Wetmore will appear only. The respondent is MJK BJK LLC et al., represented by Laura Ashenbrenner, and the Department of Lands, the respondent, represented by Angela Kaufman. Anything further? If not, Mr. Dunn, we will hear you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Bob Dunn. I represent Roy and Nancy Newton, longtime homeowners on Everwell Bay on Lake Coeur d'Alene. Despite its name, not all is well on Everwell Bay. This is as a direct result of what the defendants IDL and the Kenworthy owners have done regarding the construction of a two-story boathouse encroaching on the lake in direct violation of Idaho state law, policy, and regulations. We're here today because the trial court failed to hold IDL accountable for failing to do its job as trustee in protecting a public asset to the direct detriment of the lake-using public, the residents of Everwell Bay, and specifically the Newtons. The old adage is that a picture is worth a thousand words. That's why we included in our appellate briefs and in the supporting record photos of what transpired that caused this litigation to be filed, and now the reason that this appeal is before you. I don't know whether you have the appellate briefs in front of you, but at page 7 of our appellate brief, there are two photos that I would like to call your attention to. The first photo and I'll just hold this up. The first photo shows the pre-existing old boathouse in the foreground. In the background is the new two-story boathouse that brings us to this appeal. You can see that the background boathouse dwarfs the existing boathouse that was actually destroyed and replaced. The second photo, our brief at page 7, shows a side-by-side rendition of what transpired. The existing boathouse, and then on the far side, dwarfed by the new boathouse. The dimensions of the old boathouse were 23 by 45 by 12 feet tall. That's 1,035 square feet. The new boathouse was 38 feet by 66, and it was 30 feet tall, or 2,508 square feet. The important thing to understand about these two photos, however, is that the new boathouse that you see depicted on page 7 in both photos, boathouse is on the beach. It, during the time these photos were taken, wasn't dragged out into the lake and to its present position. So after the new boathouse was constructed, and along with the docks, they were towed out into Everwell Bay. They were affixed to new pilings, and you can see the new pilings in one of the photos just in front of the old boathouse. And then it was situated further into the lake in front of the old boathouse and docks, and the juxtaposition of what it looks like today in its present location are reflected in photos that we put in our appellate briefs, and they're at Exhibit F to the brief. This is an extremely important case, not only as an opportunity for this court to underscore and reiterate and clarify for IDL its duties and obligations as the public trustee under the public trust doctrine, and its fiduciary obligations and duties pursuant to the Lake Protection Act.
Before we get to the acts, counsel, Mr. Dunn,
I'm sorry.
Did the trial court err in concluding that the footprint for both structures was the same?
Absolutely. It absolutely was error. And the diagrams that we've included as exhibits to our appellate brief reflect what the actual footprint is. What the court got tied up into with respect to the arguments that were made is that the new structure was the same footprint as the old structure and its box. And the court basically said, since the box extended out beyond the old structure, then the new footprint met the old footprint. And docks are navigational encroachments. Boathouses are non-navigational encroachments. And so comparing the extra space of the docks to the footprint of the boat garage was absolutely inappropriate and inconsistent with the rules that are applicable to IDL in actually deciding what encroachments should look like. This case is a vehicle, I believe, in keeping with your question, Your Honor, it is a vehicle to provide necessary guidance and clarity for judges and for lawyers alike who are confronted with issues relating to the administration and management of Idaho's waters and endowment lands. In this case, for example, the trial court made original rulings in its memorandum decision that was issued on February 2nd, 2017. And the memorandum decision made a number of findings and legal conclusions concerning this case in favor of the Newtons. For instance, the trial court said the Kenworthy permit application included an expanded footprint, and the new boat garage was also considerably taller than the previous boat garage, ostensibly, so Kenworthy could install a navigational encroachment lift. That was the first time that she actually, the trial court, actually made decisions in this case and recognized that the footprint was expanded.
I have a question again related to the footprint.
Yes, ma'am.
Is it true that the new boathouse as it presently exists fits within the footprint of the docks and the old boathouse?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. It's close, but it's not an exact fitting in between the two. But that was the argument made to the trial court to justify why the new boathouse should be accepted as permitted. The trial court said the plaintiff's nuisance claims cannot be dismissed as a matter of law because whether an obstructed view constitutes a nuisance is a question of fact for the jury. That's at page 7 of her original decision. And then she went on to say at page 10, the public has a right to use this public land, and one of those uses includes aesthetic beauty. Plaintiffs have this right, and it may not be deprived without due process of law. And then she at page 11, the trial court said, IDL gave notice in the newspaper, but that notice was insufficient because the facts alleged indicate that plaintiffs were not effectively put on notice of what would actually be built by the publication in the newspaper. And at this point,
but aren't you at this point reading from the district court's decision regarding the motion to dismiss?
Yes, the original motion, where she made findings of fact and conclusions of law.
But in the context of a motion to dismiss, isn't the trial court assuming that everything in the complaint is true?
Well, Your Honor, there were declarations and affidavits that were submitted. I don't think that she relied strictly on the pleadings. There was information in the decision that she rendered that would not have been in the complaint itself. I mean, it was a fact-finding decision that she rendered based on the arguments of counsel and the pleadings that were submitted with facts. And then she went on to say that a replacement boathouse that is significantly larger than the prior boathouse and larger than even the prior float footprint was not replaced at its current size. That's a finding of fact. I mean, and she wasn't assuming those facts based on pleadings. Those were facts that were presented to the court. And then she later said the court could order removal of the boat garage per the Idaho Code 58-1309. Yet almost a year and a half later, after summary judgment motions and evidence that mirrored the evidence that she had in her original ruling, he reversed just about every factual conclusion that she reached and every legal conclusion that she reached. And she dismissed all of the summary judgment all of the claims that had been submitted by the Newtons. The state's argument, IDL's argument, as the fiduciary trustee of the public trust resource that we're talking about, is arguing that it gets to make decisions based on its own unfettered judgment, and that despite this notion, IDL violated a number of its own rules. In fact, there are four key pieces of documentation that have been submitted to the court and are part of the record that identify that the state made violations concerning its admissions. The first document that contains admissions is an email that was generated on 7/16/15 by IDL and was sent to our client, Roy Newton, and he said,
Mr. Dunn, before we start looking at those rules and about how this structure is illegal, let's talk about the notice in the newspaper. As I read Mr. Newton's affidavit, he's a realtor. He actually read the notice in the newspaper of the proposed repair and replacement of the boathouse. At that point in time, didn't Mr. Newton have the ability to contact Mr. Brady, who I understood he knew, to find out what the proposed project was, and moving a step further, actually participate and demand a hearing on this boathouse? And why is it at this point in time that this court should entertain a collateral attack on the issuance of the permit, given Mr. Newton's failure to contact Mr. Brady or otherwise demand any kind of hearing on this case?
Well, the question is a good one. And if you take a look at the face of the notice, all it says is that a new Kenworthy, and this is a quote, made application to replace and repair the existing boat garage on Lake Coeur d'Alene. If you take a look at the two photos, there was nothing repaired and replaced on the old boat garage. It was demolished. And so if you're a homeowner living on the lake and you find this 3-inch notice in the paper and about 14 words identifying what the new project is, and it says replace and repair an existing boat garage, you're thinking, okay, well, they're going to put a new roof on it. Maybe they're going to put some new siding on it. They're going to repair and replace the existing garage. No one said in this notice, oh, we're going to destroy this existing garage. We're going to demolish it, take it out of the water. We're going to build a two-story boat garage in its place. We're going to make it bigger. We're going to make it taller, 30 feet taller. And then we're going to pull it out into the lake farther than the existing boat garage. How can any reasoned person read this 14 words put out by IDL and have any inkling that in fact what's going to happen is a brand new facility is going to be built in a different place on the lake? And so when you're talking about notice, it's got to be sufficient enough to put someone, a reasonable person, on notice that in fact something's going to happen that they need to ask questions about. In this case, it would be no different if you were living in a historic house in a historical development and you said, we're going to replace and repair an existing doorway, and it turns around, what you're really going to do is you're going to tear the house down, put a new modern monstrosity in its place, and in the interim, put a new doorway on it as well. The notice on its face doesn't identify what was going to happen, and in fact, it's actually deceptive when they say that they're going to replace and repair an existing boat garage, when in fact what they're really going to do is destroy it altogether, take it out of the water, and then put a brand new one in its place. And so Mr. Newton, in reading that, and all the other Everwell property owners, had no inkling that this was going to happen. And furthermore, the notice that went out was in December of 12. There was no construction that started until 2015. In fact, IDL continued this permit process for 3 years without giving notice to anybody that was continued down the line. And as far as our clients knew, the project died on the vine when after 12 months or 24 months or 36 months, nothing happened on this project. So the notice on its face has to be reasonable. And IDL was responsible for making sure that people knew just exactly what this project was going to be. The second piece of documentation that...
So Mr. Dunn, I think Justice Brody was alluding to the fact that our case law doesn't really open the door to disgruntled homeowners like the Newtons to collaterally attack a permit that was granted some time ago by the IDL. And I'm trying to find out, what's the doorway by which you enter the court to challenge the permit?
Notice is tied to due process, Your Honor. And if in fact the notice is inadequate to identify what is really at issue, then due process is violated. And the court has said in the past that notice is important to put folks on, if you will, to identify in fact whether or not there's going to be some objections to what's being proposed. And in this case, I understand what you're saying, but if notice is a due process requirement, and notice in this case wasn't given sufficiently, then the Newtons have the right to object to the fact that their due process rights were violated. And that's what they did. And they timely did it once they understood what was actually being built. The minute that the structure was on the beach across from where they live and they understood what was being built, they started making objections to IDL saying, we want a hearing on this thing. And IDL cavalierly said, we're not giving you a hearing, and proceeded accordingly. I was just looking at the time. Thank you. One of the other omissions that was made is in a MIS email that was generated by the manager of IDL based out of Boise. And when he went and viewed the site in this email that he generated in October 13th, and he generated it at 1:33 in the afternoon, he said, with reference to the new boat garage, it is a monstrosity of a structure. And then 3 hours later, he wrote some findings about IDL's conduct in this case, and he made 6 findings. And it's on the same date. He said, IDL erred in issuing encroachment permit 873C. He went on to say, encroachment permit 873 authorized the construction of a 38-by-66-foot garage. This is more than double the size of the original authorized boat garage. And the manager of IDL, later in this same finding, says, the December 30th, 2011 application, which resulted in permit 873, did not specify the height of the proposed boat garage. Based on this interpretation of the size and the rule, a taller boat garage would not be permitted. He went on to say, in addition, following the issuance of encroachment permit 873, it appears IDL staff authorized modifications to the proposal without following the prescribed procedures. And then he said, IDL authorized the boat garage to be rotated approximately 25 degrees and moved out 35 feet. The record does not show that this plan was provided to interested parties, which goes back to the notice aspects that we've been talking about. In fact, the only mention of this in the record is the email from IDL to the Kenworth, the owner. And then lastly, on October 28th, just a couple weeks after Mr. Smiles' findings, a letter was sent to Brian Kenworth, and he said, on October 8th, 2015, you submitted a new configuration and requested approval to modify the plans to construct a boat garage following the issuance of an encroachment permit. That same day, and this is an admission from IDL, IDL incorrectly granted permission to modify the plans. And then he concludes, therefore, IDL has determined that the configuration of the boat garage and the dock needs to be exactly match the encroachment permit issued to you on February 22nd, 2012. Please configure the boat garage as authorized. That was in 2015. Nothing's been done since. For 4 years, that boat garage has remained. And the issue is whether or not the IDL has violated its obligations under the public trust doctrine as the trustee and violated the rules that apply to the Lake Protection Act. Lastly, with respect to the Newton's nuisance claims, Newton's claims for nuisance actually fit the statutory definition of nuisance in several ways. The definition of nuisance under Idaho Code 52-101 says anything which is offensive to the senses or an obstruction to the free use of property so as to interfere with the comfortable enjoyment of life or property, or unlawfully obstructs the free passage or use in the customary manner of any navigable lake is a nuisance. The trial court found that in its original rulings about what this case was about, and then later reversed itself, dismissing the nuisance claims. Nuisances are entitled to view to their view as prescribed by the Lake Protection Act's policy statement, which talks about protecting aesthetic beauty. Plaintiffs' nuisance claims cannot be dismissed as a matter of law because whether an obstructive view constitutes a nuisance is a question of fact for the jury. Your Honor, at this point in time, I will reserve some rebuttal time.
Thank you, sir. And I failed to talk to the clerk as to who was going to talk on behalf of the respondents first, Ms. Kaufman or Ms. Aschenbrenner. Who wishes to go first?
It will be me.
Very well, madam.
Good morning, Chief Justice Burdick, members of the court. Good to be with you here this morning in this new world we're doing with Zoom arguments. It's quite an adventure. My name is Angela Scher Kaufman. I'm a Deputy Attorney General for the state of Idaho, and I'm here today representing one of the respondents, the Idaho Department of Lands. I will be splitting my time equally with Ms. Aschenbrenner, who's here today on behalf of the LLC respondents. It's important, I think, to talk at the outset what this case is really about. It's about a boat garage that the Newtons dislike because of its height. That they dislike it is not in question. But the issue is that there are the legal remedies and theories that they have put before the court, both the district court and before you today, simply do not provide the relief that they seek. And they don't provide that relief that they seek as a matter of law. At the very most, this is a nuisance action. Ms. Aschenbrenner, I think, is planning to focus her remarks on that. But as to the nuisance component, I'll simply note that under Idaho legal precedent, the mere height of something without proof that it was erected in out of spite or specifically to annoy a neighbor is simply insufficient to constitute a nuisance.
What about if that nuisance, alleged nuisance, interferes with the enjoyment of the actual residence of the complaining party, i.e. the glare off of the boathouse actually enters into their home?
Thank you, Chief Justice. I still believe that that's insufficient. There's nothing that I've seen in the Idaho case law that glare constitutes a nuisance. I would also note here.
So in fact, someone factory would have a right to have a spotlight that turned night into day because of their spotlights. And I'm speaking primarily of the dairies in the Magic Valley who have had this ongoing issue of glare into their homes, turning night into day. That's not a public nuisance.
I think the best way for me to respond to that, Chief Justice, is that situation that you describe, and as a Magic Valley native, I'm somewhat familiar with that situation, is different than the situation that is before you today in the record. What we have before you in the record, and I believe there's a couple of photographs, although I'm sorry, I don't have the actual page citations to the record, show glare at a certain point of time during the day that appears to be visible from the Newton's residence. But it's a particular time of day. And if I remember correctly, the district court actually noted that the short-term effect of it and the fact that it affects only a part of the wider range of vision of the Newtons from their home.
Is that in fact an issue of fact then? that has been decided on summary judgment?
No, I don't. Chief Justice verdict. No, I don't think it's an issue of fact because it's still just one small component of the greater enjoyment of the property. And, I just under the nuisance laws of the state of Idaho, I don't believe it constitutes a nuisance as a matter of law.
And I'm sorry, I didn't tumble this until it was mentioned by Mr. Dunn. When you see a public notice for a new development, et cetera, it says notice to the public, here's what's going to happen in this property, and here's the date and time of a hearing that you can appear at concerning that new development. Is there some sort of an exemption for the Idaho Department of Lands in their notice requirements where there is no notice of any proposed hearing? And in fact, it is upon the landowner to request the hearing. Is that in your IDAPA regulations or in a statute?
Chief Justice Burdick, yes, it is. That would be in Idaho Code Section 58-1306, which is part of the Lake Protection Act. It sets forth specific standards or a specific component regarding notice.
Well, don't waste your time. You pointed it to me, and I'll look at it later, and I appreciate that. Okay. I'm sorry I missed it before.
No, that's just fine. That's just fine. So,
Ms. Kaufman, you mentioned the statute as far as nuisances is concerned. I'm looking at 52-111. It says anything which is an obstruction to the free use of property so as to interfere with the comfortable enjoyment of life or property is a nuisance and the subject of an action. If the Newtons have to close their curtains in their home to avoid the glare, would that be something that would interfere with the comfortable enjoyment of their property?
That is, I think, a subjective question.
For a jury, isn't it?
Pardon me?
For a jury, isn't it?
It could be.
Thank you. Look, I want to go to a different line of questioning. So let's assume, for purposes of a hypothetical, that there was some malfeasance on the part of the Department of Lands. Let's say somebody was bribed and the permit issued and there was no objection by an intervener as to the permit that was issued. Would the intervener who now says that was issued because of malfeasance remedyless, or can that person now bring an action to try to undo what was wrongfully done?
You're right, that is a hypothetical, so I apologize for that.
I'm not trying to impugn anyone at the Department of Lands. I'm just, for hypothetical purposes, what would that be?
Sure. There may be a legal remedy in that situation. What it would not be is what you see before you today. It would not be a judicial review action because it would simply be untimely. It would not be a public trust doctrine case, which is one of the theories espoused by the Newtons.
Why wouldn't it be a public trust question?
Public trust doctrine. It may be a matter of public trust in the sense of, does the public trust the government and employees, but it's not a matter of the public trust doctrine, which is the doctrine specifically espoused in Idaho Code Title 58, Chapter 12, that specifically pertains to the state holding the beds and banks of navigable waters in trust for the people of Idaho so that they can use those so that they can use those waters. So when I say public trust doctrine, I'm distinguishing between it's something different than just a matter of public trust, as I believe you're talking about.
Wouldn't in a situation like that there be perhaps some type of theory like ultra vires? And I realize I'm not using the right term in connection with a public agency or a municipality. I think there's a legal equivalent of ultra vires actions on the part of a public agency. Maybe does that term ring any bells?
Yes, Justice Brody, it does. And I think that in that situation, it would have to do with the authority of the public employee who would have been bribed in that situation, their authority to act, and whether they acted within the bounds of their authority. However, you know, that's not the situation that we have here today. What we have it here today and have had is a situation where IDL issued an encroachment permit in accordance with the Lake Protection Act and the Lake Protection Act rules. It issued that permit in 2012. It published a notice in the paper in accordance with the Lake Protection Act, received no objections, and then subsequently issued the permit.
What do we do with this memorandum from Mr. Smith, which clearly is setting forth his opinion that this permit should never have been granted?
Thank you, Justice Brody. You're right, Mr. Smith, who I would clarify is not the manager of IDL. He is a program manager. In the record, and again, I apologize for not having the citation right in front of me, there's the affidavit of Eric Wilson, who is the bureau chief over Mr. Smith. And he explains that what he directed Mr. Smith to do was a review of what had happened to ensure that IDL had a path going forward. And if there were errors made, that they would not be made in the future. I think what you do with with Mr. Smith's memo is acknowledge that he made some findings. Also, the fact that he made findings, I don't think necessarily provided a path or a reason for IDL to revoke the permit that, frankly, it issued at the time in accordance with the Lake Protection Act and with the applicable administrative rules.
Counsel, I've looked at the original application for the permit that the Kenworthy submitted. And then, of course, we've all seen the pictures of what was actually built. I'm just having a hard time. To me, I don't see that the drawings in the application bear a lot of similarity to what was actually built. And I think IDL at one time may have believed that because they put a temporary stop order on the construction. Do you want to address that?
Sure. And I believe Jim Brady addressed this a little bit in one of the affidavits that's in the record. What happened with that was Mr. Brady, in response to concerns in 2015, went out and inspected the construction that was going on the boat garage. He put a temporary stop work order on construction until he could go back and review the file and review the plans in the office. He went back and did that and then lifted the stop order once he had reviewed the plans. He was comfortable that the boat garage was being constructed in accordance with the plans that were in the application.
And shouldn't have been accepted.
Pardon me, Justice Stegner?
And those plans shouldn't have been accepted by the IDL to begin with.
And I'm hesitating because I want to make sure that I understand your question. Are you saying that
the boat garage expanded from roughly 1,000 square feet to 2,000 square feet, and the regs that existed at the time indicated that unless it were for emergency purposes, it should not have been accepted by the IDL at the time.
So under the Lake Protection Act rules, and it would be the rules, first of all, let me say, as they existed prior to 2019, because they were amended in 2019, the rules spoke about the footprint of the boat garage, and the way IDL views encroachments in part is, and when you're looking at the effect on navigation, fish and wildlife habitat, you look at the overall footprint. What is it taking up on the surface of the water, those impacts to the water? In IDL's assessment, and again, I believe this is reflected in Mr. Brady's affidavits, it looked at the overall footprint of the existing encroachments. The boat garage walls were moved out to cover an area that had previously been covered by a walkway. But again, that walkway was still part of the existing footprint of the boat garage. And therefore the overall footprint was not expanded.
Well, I'm looking at the IDAPAs. They are 20.03.04.015.08B that existed on April 2nd, 2008, which are attached to your brief, that says applications for permits to construct new boat garages or to expand the total square footage of the existing footprint will not be accepted unless the application is to support local emergency services. It seems like that shouldn't have been accepted, but that's my reading of the reg.
Justice Stegner, I appreciate your reading of the regulation, IDL's interpretation.
And with all due respect.
I didn't just say that, did I? If I really apologize. I will just say that IDL was the agency charged with interpreting and applying the Lake Protection Act. Its interpretation was that the footprint encompassed the footprint of the entire set of encroachments when assessing impacts to the lake.
On the permit itself, I'm looking at 233. The drawing indicates a dock that goes out and it's existing. And then there's a perpendicular dock at the top of the page that says existing. And then there's an expansion in between those two. Is that the walkway that you're speaking of? It does not indicate existing.
And I'm just looking for my copy of the permit here. Okay, if I understand your question, the items that are the docks that are marked as existing, that what I'm speaking about when I talk about moving the walls out, that's reflected on the boat garage component of the drawing where it shows how the walls are gonna be moved out. And the walkway that I'm talking about is on the bottom and right-hand side of that boat garage drawing.
Okay, why isn't that expansion indicating that it is existing? You see that middle area?
Sure. I think that the middle area on the boat garage drawing, that's indicating an existing, that in the boat garage as it existed at the time, that was there. And I can't say with certainty, but I think it's showing either the existing wall or an existing boat slip. I'm not sure what that's showing.
And excuse me, Your Honor, Chief Justice, I don't know that we've stopped time because we were going to split our time. And if maybe Ms. Gagnepan can confirm with us.
That's correct. You are now into her time. And as such, if you'll answer the question, don't start the timer until this question has been answered, please. Madam, your answer in this regard, was that area existing or not existing?
So the area that's designated that has an arrow pointing to the existing, that was existing previously, yes.
Okay, fine. At this point in time, your time is up, and I apologize to Ms. Ashenbrenner. Because she was referring to questions by the court, rather than her continued oratory, I'm going to ask the clerk to give you the full 15 minutes. It seemed to me that we were asking her questions that we wanted answered, taking away time from you, and I want to be fair to you, Madam.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I appreciate that.
Mr. Dunn, is there an objection in that regard?
No, Your Honor, that's fair. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Madam, you may proceed.
Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court. Thank you, and I apologize for interrupting. I just took a look at the timer, and I realized that we were running over, I thought. So
we appreciate your help.
I'll try not to repeat what Ms. Shear Kaufman, her arguments today. Obviously, we have some similar interest here in requesting this court to affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment dismissal of the Newton's claims. And as Ms. Shear Kaufman indicated, I'll try to focus on the nuisance claims. And we do ask that this court affirm the district court's decision that the nuisance failed to establish a prima facie nuisance claim. Mr. Kinworthy, on behalf of the LLC defendants, he went by the book in the permitting process, and he was completely transparent in the permit application process. And if you take a look, you were just looking at, I think, what I have as Exhibit A14 to LLC Respondent's Brief, which is the diagram that was submitted in relationship to the boat garage permit application. And that specific diagram shows the existing docks that have been there since at least 1997, which was the prior permit, if not before, since the 1970s. And the boat garage areas you see on the left, and Chief Justice was asking about the existing walls. And again, that was the existing boat garage slip. And as you can see underneath, it says move wall to edge. So we see the line below that moving the wall to the edge of the walkways that surrounded the boat garage. In addition, below you see in relief the height of the boat garage. And so it specifically depicts that the height would be increasing, and it shows the roof lines. And if you look at that in relief, it demonstrates the increased height. In addition, in the application itself, it describes increasing the height of the boat garage to add a mezzanine. And so it's entirely consistent, and Mr. Kinworthy was transparent in that process. Not only was he clear about what he was requesting, he made sure that before he submitted the permit and during the permitting process, that it was all right for him to use the existing float footprint as it existed before, and as it had existed for decades.
So, Ms. Ashenbrenner, what was the mezzanine intended for?
For storage.
Not for residence?
No.
And why would you put a wet bar in a storage area?
There is not a wet bar in the storage area. I think that might have been something on one of the original plans. Is that what you're referring to?
I'm just trying to understand the facts. So which plan had the wet bar in it?
And I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't have that before me in the record, but I don't believe that was included in the permit application, and nor was that included when Mr. Brady went to inspect the boat garage. He did so in 2016 after construction, and he indicated that the boat garage was in compliance, except for there were some furniture items stored in the boat garage at that period of time, which were later removed.
So it's merely storage on the mezzanine?
On the mezzanine, correct. Because if you look on the inside of the boat garage, the majority of it is open so larger boats can fit into the boat garage. But then there's a mezzanine so they can store other boats like smaller rowboats, watercraft related equipment.
And but one thing, sorry, go ahead. You talked about the transparency of Mr. Kenworthy. Was there ever any indication in the drawing as to the height of the building or what the height would be on the drawing itself?
Yes, if you look at, as I said, for me, the record I can refer you to is Exhibit A14 to the LLC respondent's brief. If you look at the relief where it shows the pilings and the roof line, it specifically has an estimate measurement of, I think on the right there, it has 12 feet. And so if you put that to scale, it shows the boat garage somewhere between 25, I think, to 30 feet. But if you note in the record that during construction, Mr. Kenworthy actually dropped down the height. So it's actually not as tall as it would have been if it were consistent with these plans. But other than that, it is entirely consistent with the plan, except for he actually reduced the size, the height.
I didn't see the measurement that you were referring to. I don't have what I think of as a measurement as to the height on any of the documents that I've seen.
Okay, do you see on the lower picture of the diagram that was submitted? And it shows the 66 foot length.
Yes.
It shows the dock length below of 97 feet. And then it says on the right-hand side, lake bed, and above that, I think it says low water mark. And then there is a 12 foot mark. Do you see that 12 foot designation? And then the high water mark.
I'm sorry, I don't. I'm looking at the document that's MJK/BJK243.
Yes. And I apologize if the quality isn't, we can perhaps find that at another location in the record, but that specifically has a 12 foot height designation as a number 12 with a little dash next to it.
Between the lake bed and the level of the dock itself, John, that's what it is.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
So that doesn't show the height of the structure that's to be built, does it?
In relationship to that, it shows an estimate measurement. So if you look at that as being 12 foot, and then you use that approximate measurement, of course, this isn't exact because it's a hand-drawn diagram. It shows that it would be, you know, more than 24 feet.
In my high school drafting class, that would have gotten you a D for failing to put the actual height of the building as you did the difference between the lake bed and the dock itself. Unfortunate omission or on purpose? What would you think?
I don't see it as an omission, Your Honor.
He has footage on every other measurement except for the height of the actual building.
Well, and if I may, Your Honor, I believe that the height itself, if you look at the pilings as they're existing, it shows that the building is going to be taller than the pilings.
No, I'm talking about proper plans that show the height of and appropriate length, width, and height of the object. There's nothing showing the height other than some hand-drawn perspective of pilings and extrapolation of 12 feet between the lake bed and the dock itself.
And it's my understanding, Your Honor, that when a person is applying for a permit, they don't have to submit exact plans. They need to submit a diagram along with their plans to demonstrate what they're intending to build. And in addition to the drawing, it's not just the diagram that we're talking about here. In the description of the joint application for permits, he specifically talks about increasing the height of the boat garage. And excuse me for a second. He talks about adding a mezzanine. Let me find that.
But still, it doesn't say 24 feet high. Nowhere does it.
It doesn't specifically say the exact height of the boat garage, but I would posit to the court that looking at the diagram, as IDL did when they went back to determine whether it was in compliance, it shows the height in general. Yes, it's not exact, but I think when you can compare it to the dock size and what existed previously to what he was seeking and his combined with his description, it shows that the boat garage was going to be increasing in height and moving those walls out to the edge of that float footprint.
And I understand your argument, just don't agree with it, but thank you.
Well, isn't looking at the record that we have in this case, I'm what's coming to mind for me is statements from IDL employees to the effect that we have to make sure this kind of thing doesn't happen again, and we need to change our rules. And so clearly the department has changed its position with regard to the construction of a boat garage like this one, correct?
Yes, I think that is correct. And but when Mr. Kenworthy applied, what the regulations then said, the footprint and size, and what based on his conversations with IDL as well as the regulations, their main concern was the effect of the the footprint on the water and the ecosystems. And so as a result, perhaps as a result of this, I'm not sure if there's been other cases that are similar where persons are have interpreted the non-navigational encroachment permit requirements to not restrict height. Now IDL has changed the regulation to say that a person cannot increase the height of a boat garage absent other circumstances. And that's something that you can see in the internal IDL communication in this litigation as well. But to be fair, Jim Brady in his conversations with the local Everwell Bay residents, as well as Mr. Kenworthy, when they were trying to informally resolve this, he specifically said, you know, I can't say there's no restrictions on height, and restricting height wasn't specifically articulated in the regulations. One thing I think it's important to note also is that the boat garage as it sits today, although it's not in the record, Ms. Sher Kaufman and I both put this in a footnote, it's been rotated back to the permitted position. Because during the litigation, before litigation in October of 2015, IDL requested Mr. Kenworthy to rotate the boat garage out in an effort to accommodate the view shed of some other neighbors in the bay. And he did that. He complied with that request. And then shortly after that, Mr. Smith did an after the fact review. They decided, no, this needs to be rotated back to where it's permitted. And litigation ensued. The court decided that it wasn't going to require the boat garage to be moved during the pendency of litigation, and also due to other weather issues that arose. And so it was finally moved back in June of last year. So as the boat garage sits today across the bay from the Newtons, it is in the permitted location and it has the same L-shaped docks. Granted, the footprint, as we've been discussing, the walls of the pre-existing boat garage had been moved out to the edge of that float footprint, and it's taller, and no one's disputing that it did become taller. But it's over 300 feet away from the Newton's property across the bay, and you can see that in some of the aerial photographs that were submitted both by Mr. Kenworthy in the application process, as well as Jim Brady, and those are exhibits B to the LLC respondent's brief as well. But as Ms. Sher Kaufman was indicating, the Newtons have brought an untimely and collateral attack on this permit, essentially, but they also claim that it's a public or private nuisance, and the claims are a little bit muddled because the public trust doctrine issues and Lake Protection Act issues aren't properly before this court because this isn't a judicial review action. There's no private right of action under these doctrines to bring it, but nonetheless, we're here, and the court made a determination that the boat garage is not unlawful, and we would request the court to uphold that determination. But turning to the
counsel, before we leave the issue of height, I was just reviewing the record, and there is the statement that was made at the time there was the temporary stop order by Mr. Brady that IDL does not and cannot allow second floors on boat garages. End of story. When he said that, was he referencing some regulation about height?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think that that was just an initial response to try to appease the neighbors as they realized that there's a height increase. And that was before he went back and looked at the application and realized that, oh yes, this actually does show an increase in height. And realizing that their own regulations didn't restrict height at the time. That sense has been remedied.
So he was mistaken then when he said that the IDL cannot allow a second story?
Well, there's two different pieces to this. First of all, the boat garage doesn't have a second story. It's a mezzanine on the inside for a boat.
True, storage. But he made the comment about a second story, which would suggest that there's some requirement about height that perhaps hasn't been cited to the court.
And Your Honor, I think that was what IDL appears to have been grappling with and realizing that their regulations didn't restrict height. And so, yeah, I think you're right, Your Honor. So turning to the nuisance claims, I'll focus. The Newtons didn't present any evidence of public nuisance, and so I'll focus on private nuisance just briefly. I see I'm running out of time. But first of all, the Newtons had to show a clear right to relief to sustain their nuisance claim, and they simply failed to do that. Aesthetic objections aren't sufficient. They don't have a right to an unchanged view, and glare is something that has to be an untenable, rendering their use and enjoyment of their property untenable, and that's simply not what happened here. And I see my time is up. I ask that you affirm the district court's decisions. Thank you.
Well, thank you. How much time does the appellant have?
10 minutes, Your Honor.
Very well. Mr. Dunn.
Thank you, Your Honor. Asking for forgiveness rather than permission is not standard under the public trust doctrine or the LPA or Idaho's regulations. If you go to the application that was filed by Mr. Kenworthy, and I think the comment was he went by the book. If you take a look at the application that he submitted has a couple statements in it that are flat untrue based on what was actually constructed. The second page of what's entitled the joint application for permit says no modification to existing dock attached to the shore. It's longer, it's further out into the lake. When the argument's made to you that the dock has been, or the boat garage has been rotated back, remember there are two issues here. Whether or not the boat garage was turned into the bay, affecting the views of the Newtons, is one issue. Whether it was moved further out into the bay beyond the existing garage is a second issue. That boat garage today stands 35 or 38 feet further than the old boat garage, affecting the views of everyone in Everwell Bay. And that's undisputed. And you can take a look at the photos that we provide. It has not moved. And this notion that they're arguing that the...
Mr. Dunn, I need you to clarify that. So the Newtons are disputing that the boathouse has been rotated back?
No, the boathouse has been rotated. It hasn't been moved. It's just it's just rotated around. And it's a fact that it hasn't been moved. Because if you take a look at the pictures, the new pilings that were placed out in front of the existing boat garage. And those pilings haven't been affected. In fact, if you take a look at the declaration that was filed in here by the boat pilings contractor, he said that in order to accommodate monstrosity new boathouse, you have to put new pilings in. The pilings that are in there today are insufficient. And the implication is, if the pilings that are in there now, the new pilings that were placed in front of the old existing garage are not sufficient, and they've got to be replaced, a new permit is going to be required. And if the boat garage is left in place today, it's going to pose a public hazard if that boat garage breaks loose from pilings that are inadequate. And that brings me to the argument about this footprint notion. They're arguing that the boat garage could move out to the edge of the walkways or the docks. But That's nonsensical, because navigational encroachments include docks, piers, boat lifts, pilings. Non-navigational encroachments are boat garages. If IDL and its regulations, or the public trust doctrine, or the Lake Protection Act contemplated that you could have docks identify the expansion of a boat garage, then you're taking a look at two different concepts with two different permit requirements. You have to have permits to put in non-navigational encroachments like docks and piers, and you have to have a permit to put in a garage. It's incongruent, but the notion is that you can just marry a boat garage non-navigational encroachment with a navigational encroachment and say that's the footprint. That's not what the regulations say, and that's not what was intended. And with respect to this height argument, if you take a look at their own regulations, and the regulations I'm referring to are the administrative regs that they've propounded, they've identified the notion that you have to have a permit in order to increase the size of the boat garage. That's not only width and depth, that's height. And there was no indication whatsoever in the application that they were going to request a permit for a second story. And the argument that that he followed the rules, and that IDL followed the rules with respect to the application, is borne out when you take a look at the application itself. And the application requires that application be submitted to different agencies, not just to IDL. In fact, at the bottom of the application permit, that is in fact an IDL application, it says it's got to be submitted to the Corps of Engineers and the Water Resources Department. That wasn't done. And in fact, their own regulations identify that, and this is at 1306, the regulations of 1306, identify that, and I'll quote, copies of the required application shall be submitted to federal, e.g., U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, state departments, e.g., Departments of Fish and Game, Environmental Quality, Water Resources, and local agencies. None of that was done here. The IDL did nothing in respect to performing under its own regulations. And as a result, this application was defective, and as a result, the permit was issued unlawfully.
I'm having a little trouble, and I think the word is causation. The fact they didn't give something to IDWR or to the Corps of Engineers, how does that affect the cause of action here? IDWR would have no input in that regard. It would be my remembering of it, as well as the Corps of Engineers. How would that have changed anything? Is there any evidence that the Corps of Engineers has a problem with this, if it had been given to them?
There's no evidence of that, Your Honor, but it goes back to the issue of notice. One of the justices made an inquiry about what the obligation of the Newtons would have been had they had better information about what was being built. Shouldn't they have made a better investigation of what the plans looked like and what kind of drawings were submitted? Well, at the same time, if the rules and regulations required submissions to other agencies, that would have been available to a homeowner who had questions raised. In fact, if the notice had been proper, and they knew that this was going to be a monstrosity garage that was going to be replacing an existing facility, a homeowner would likely have said, okay, who's looking at this besides IDL? And they would have identified that there were three or four or five other agencies that were having input. That wasn't done. It just shows the lack of protocol and the lack of adherence to their own regulations and the rules that apply to these encroachments. The trial court's granting a summary judgment against the Newtons constitute a reversible error. And the reversible error was contrary to the evidence that was presented. And the evidence establishes beyond any question that IDL unlawfully permitted this Kenworthy encroachment in violation of the public trust doctrine. And we're not only talking about the public trust doctrine, but we're talking about the Lake Protection Act as well. And the Lake Protection Act is the provision that allows due process. And the Lake Protection Act is the one that contemplates private nuisance actions. And there was error in that the injunction that should have been issued was not, and the injunction was to move this boat garage back to the bank, to the shore, so that it could be permitted properly and the deficiencies rectified. And the evidence established that IDL was required to follow Idaho law regarding permit applications, which it did not.
Mr. Dunn, I have a question. I'm still struggling to understand what was the size of the boat garage that preceded the current boat garage. Was it the one that existed in the 1970s, or was it the one that was permitted in the 1990s?
Even IDL doesn't know the answer to that question, Your Honor. There's some question about that. But the old boat garage was 23 by 45 by 12, and the question is, how did it even get that sized? Because the permits and the application on file don't correlate to how that particular size was established to the extent that it was being modified in December of 2012.
If you're repairing and replacing one that's 20 something by 40 something, that's quite different than replacing it with something that's 38 by 66.
Exactly. That's exactly right. The court's being requested to reverse the trial court summary judgment ruling against the appellant, finding that the notice was insufficient as a matter of fact and law, and thus the Newtons were deprived of due process. We're asking the court to find that the Kenworthy's boathouse wrongfully encroaches upon the navigable waters of Idaho. We're asking for an order that respondents by way of injunctive relief are to restore the condition of the lake before their construction. Prior to their unauthorized and unlawful encroachments, we're asking the court to remand to district court for a jury trial on nuisance claims and the claims for damages, and to award appellants costs and fees in having to prosecute this matter. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. At this time, the matter is under advisement. We thank all counsel for this new experiment, and it went quite well once we got it going. As a matter of private privilege, I'd like to ask Ms. Ashenbrenner, do you have relatives in the Magic Valley?
Chief Justice, I'm not sure if I do, given that it's my married name, so I'm still exploring
All right.
that okay. side of my family.
Well, the Ashenbrenners I know in Twin Falls are just the finest folks in the world. So.
Well, that's good to know.
With that, we will go off record. I will initiate the Zoom conference with the justices to discuss this matter, and have a great day, all counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justices.